The most frequently seen form of introversion is introverted sensing. There's probably someone in your family who has this as their number one function. ISFJs make up 20% of the population for females and about 12% of the population for males. ISTJs make up about 18% of the population for males and about 10% of the population for females. This is a very high percentage, and there's a very high chance you have someone with introverted sensing in your life. I'm interviewing my son, Nathan, who is an introverted sensor who's also a feeler. Only 25% of boys are feelers, and only 25% of girls are thinkers. What this means is feelers are more sensitive and emotional and make decisions based on feelings. Thinkers are more logical and rational and make decisions based on facts. Nathan's going to talk about his sensory processing, anxiety, OCD, self-consciousness, his introversion, his social preferences, his struggles, and lots of advice for parents with a child who is an introverted sensor, aka highly sensitive person. Introverted sensors who are logical thinkers are often type 1s, type 5s, or type 6s on the Enneagram, and introverted sensors who are more emotional feelers are usually type 9s or type 2s on the Enneagram. Have you ever wondered if your child's behavior is normal? Is your child a living puzzle you can't understand? Are you craving insight into the minds of your adopted or stepchildren? Learn how God designed them and how to guide them while also gaining insight into your own joy-robbing patterns. Welcome to Not So Normal Parenting, where we unravel the mysteries of family dynamics from toddlers to teens using team-building tools like Myers-Briggs and the Enneagram. I'm Wendy Gossett, personality prodigy, parenting coach, best-selling author, speaker, and viral embarrassing dancing mom. I raised a son and daughter that are as different as Bob Ross and the Black Widow, and I am definitely not normal. Okay, let's dive into the beautifully not-so-normal together. Just come out of the chute. What's happening in May, Nathan?
I'm graduating my undergrad at Biola University. So I'm going to have my bachelor's in science with my pre-med major, taking the MCAT at the end of April. A lot of moving parts, applying into med school. So it'll be a crazy season, but looking forward to it. And yeah, I'm just excited to see where this path takes me.
And he's joining us from Biola University in Los Angeles in his dorm room. And look, it's very neat.
It so is. My roommate is out of town, so he made his bed. He normally doesn't, so this is perfect.
Yeah, so Nathan is a type 9 ISFJ, introverted sensing, feeling, and judging. And judging is sometimes misunderstood, like judgmental, like Nathan's probably the least judgmental person on the planet, but judging means you just need more structure, you're more decisive. Well, you're not decisive. Introverts are not decisive. Introverts are they're a conundrum. So even though he's an ISFJ, which means he's supposed to be decisive, He's actually not decisive.
Quite the opposite.
His first function is introverted sensing, which is what we're talking about today, which is a open-ended perceiving function. But the function that he extroverts, this is probably getting way too deep for some people, but is his second function, which is extroverted feeling. And so whatever function you extrovert is what makes you a J or a P. And so because he's an extroverted feeler, feelers and thinkers are judgers. All right. So some of the qualities of an ISFJ or SI, introverted sensing, are devoted to family, watchful to ensure safety and security. SJs love their home. Sensing judgers love their home. They are kind of homebodies. They can be. They loved COVID.
I
They
loved COVID.
loved COVID. Follow the rules and procedures, thoughtful and prepared, well-balanced and steady, protective and cautious, observant, loyal, trusting, faithful, hard worker, trustworthy, very sociable and reputable, self-sacrificial, detail-oriented, calm, sensitive in their five senses. They're an introvert, committed to a cause, traditional and connected to the past. First question, how has knowing your temperament helped you in life, Nathan?
I think it gives me I think nines especially, the peacemaker or an ISFJ like myself. I think they a lot of the times I like to sweep things under the rug, and just kind of live my life in a state of almost complacency, like oh, I'm fine with where I'm at. I'm fine. I'm fine. I don't need any help. I don't need to improve on anything. I don't need to change. I want to just stay the same. it's really been important for me to recognize, no, I need to expose my weaknesses. I need to expose my fears, my insecurities. I need to address these. Because if I don't, if I sweep them under the rug, like I do, I tend to do, I won't grow as a person. I won't get out of my comfort zone. I won't experience that development that is so critical for ISFJs. So it's just allowed me to see a lot of my weaknesses, a lot of my tendencies that would go unnoticed if I didn't have these tools. And so this has just helped me in my overall interactions and in being assertive, branching out to new people, knowing that getting uncomfortable and getting in uncomfortable scenarios is really beneficial, actually, even if everything in my being is telling me not to do something that is outside my comfort zone. I tell myself, no, it's good. It expands upon my weaknesses, and it gives me a better exposure to just what might be out there. I definitely think it I started noticing like the different personalities, especially just like in a little in elementary school and middle school, high school, and it just allowed me to like understand my peers better, and then also why I wasn't meshing with a certain teacher or a certain, student, why I felt like sometimes like I felt like the outsider, like I was different from all the other people. It allowed me to see like, oh, I have tendencies that are very different from those around me, and I can't, get down on myself about it, but I just have to know that that's just how I was wired, and I need to, but I also need to expand upon that and also, embrace other people's differences. So.
I remember that conversation where we were talking about everybody in Jordan's friendship group were they're a bunch of lions and or a bunch of peas, which are the free-spirited players, and you're more of an old soul, more of a conversationalist, somebody who likes kind of a structure to an activity, and and that kind of helped you realize why those weren't your peeps.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I was that was just a time where I was still like I kind of understood what I was looking for in a friend group. And these people were super nice, just amazing people, and but it just I something never clicked in that friend group. It was just they always wanted to just do something spontaneously. We always approached anything without a plan, and that's what they considered like fun, fun and different. But I was like, oh, I need a structure. I need to know when I can go back home and like recharge by myself. I can't do this all day, but they could do it all day. And so I just needed a little bit of structure, and just a little bit more of a plan. And I'm like, okay, now I'm looking for that in a friend group. And that's why I just kind of feel like I didn't click with them. I needed to recharge, and I wanted like a scheduled time to recharge. And even now in college, it's hard to find that time to recharge, and nobody makes plans anymore. But through this, I've been growing. So it's been really good. I've been prioritizing time to recharge throughout the day, and it's been really good. And I've just kind of found what I'm looking for in a friend group.
So Nathan is one of those extroverted looking introverts because he's
Yes.
an introvert. But like my daughter, and I mentioned Jordan before, that's my daughter. Her friend group is kind of wild and crazy. Awesome, awesome people, but just like their battery never drains. And so yeah, so Nathan is very like outgoing and he can go with the flow of anything going on in college. Like we were so impressed when we saw the way you handled college. You know, and it's because his secondary function is extroverted feeling, and that just comes out. But he keeps talking about recharging, and that's because using that extroverted feeling, which is his secondary brain function, drains his battery because he's number one, an introvert. And the kind of introvert you are, Nathan, is pretty amazing. I mean, can you talk a little bit about introverted sensing and your memory?
I tend to just really, I think as an introverted sensor, I think we just tend to really analyze the environment around us and lock it away in almost like a filing cabinet of like, this is all of the information I remembered from this day. Like we just tend to just analyze the things around us, and I think we're always just curious and asking questions. And I think that's just what gives us a really good memory, especially me. And I remember the most random details too. Like my friends will come up to me and like they're like, how do you know this? These are just a bunch of random facts. But I think it's just I'm a very detail-oriented person as well. And so I just pay attention to even the most small, minute things. And I even remember like my childhood memories. I would pay attention to small little details that didn't seem to like matter. I don't know why I remember those small little details, but they just like come to the forefront of my mind so easily. And I think it's just that introverted sensing, I think we just really analyze our environment well.
It's actually your superpower, and a lot of introverts don't even realize what their superpower is because it's an introverted brain function. It means it's personal for you, and you don't really show it. All introverts kind of hold their cards close. And then when I started learning temperament, because of your sister, she was so hard to parent. I used the temperament that I was using with business teams. Myers-Briggs and the Enneagram with my own family, and it was just super helpful. But that's when we really started noticing, Nathan, because you're the type of personality that sometimes you just blend in, and your superpowers or your strengths might not show up. And so that's when we started realizing you had this amazing memory and this amazing eye for details, and you were paying so much attention to the world around you. This is probably going to really surprise people watching or listening, but what kinds of grades did you get at elementary school, Nathan?
Just I probably like technically failed all my classes. I mean, you can't really do that in elementary school, but like I did probably the
I
bare minimum.
remember thinking, well, our kids are average, but that's okay. We love them. They have really good qualities, but they're average students, but they have other strengths, because both you and Jordan, neither one of you, were doing very well in elementary school. And so we first noticed that Nathan would try to put on his bathing cap for swim lessons like this. Like, okay, so for the people listening, with one hand, he would try to put on a bathing cap and without the right like tension. And like he tried to put on a sock with one hand. And we thought, that's not right. You had sensory processing. So sequencing was tough for you and all those things because you are introverted sensors are so sensitive in their five senses. Can you talk about some other ways that that showed up in you as a kid, because your five senses would make you overstimulated, and that's what sensory processing is. You get overstimulated. So how did it show up?
No, I think for situations where just a lot is being thrown at me, especially like as a kid when a lot was being thrown at me, obviously as a kid it was going to be worse because I was experiencing these things for kind of the first time. And if I was just in an overwhelming situation, I would just kind of shut down because there's so much happening and I need to process every little thing at a time in order to, perform well. That if I was in an overwhelming scenario, I would just kind of almost shut down in a way, not function right, because I was just like, I'm overloaded of senses I can't handle anymore. I'm filled to the brim of just sensory overload. And so then, I would perform badly. Like, things that you would normally think are, irrational or stupid, I do when I become like overwhelmed and have that sensory overload. And of course, that was more evident as I was a kid, but and it's definitely gotten much, much, much better. I barely even notice it anymore. But it's just that sensory overload, especially for kids that have the introverted sensing, that they need time to process things. They need time to adjust to different n or new circumstances. And when someone or something overwhelms them, you will find them just not performing, or not performing at all, or performing very badly, or just having trouble just adjusting.
You had some kind of fixations too. Like that was interesting because you'd be overstimulated, but I wonder if that's what caused you to kind of like fixate on one thing.
I just am a very like not only am I detail oriented, but I like to just have one focus. I wasn't a very good multitasker. I've gotten a lot better at it now in college, but I just remember, as an introverted sensor, I wanted to take in as much information about one thing, focus on that first, take in all of the details of that, and then move on to the next task, whatever it was. So I wasn't able to like handle all of these different things coming at me at once. I would just kind of pick each element apart, if that makes sense. I wouldn't be able to multitask, but rather focus on one task first, finish that, and then move on. And that's just the way I still mentally process now. I just kind of get through one thing at a time with as much detail and care as I can. So I think that's why I would just kind of fixate on only one thing. I like to take everything in with full detail and not a bunch of just, multitasking requires you to just kind of quickly observe different things. But I was more of like, oh, I want to slowly take this in, slowly analyze it, slowly observe it.
If you have a little ISFJ, they are so easy to parent. I mean, they are. But if you're an extrovert, if your parents, both of you are extroverted and your whole family's extroverted and you have a little ISFJ, that's going to be so hard on them because they do need more of a slow pace. They need just like you said that so well. I couldn't say it any better. So just really take into consideration that they need a slower pace. They need to focus on one thing at a time. They don't do well at multitasking, and you can't make them feel less than because of that, because that's why they have this supercharged memory that's like a computer. It's because of the way they're taking in information so thoroughly. So that was, and you would fixate on rings and watches. And describe what lollipop syndrome was. We kind of coined a term. We called it lollipop syndrome.
I kind of had like low grade. I mean, maybe it was OCD. I don't know. It was definitely a part of my personality, where because I analyze details so finely, just in my sensory, like in the world around me, I would notice like little imperfections in things, and that would kind of bother me and would just kind of rub me the wrong way. So we called it lollipop syndrome because when I was just like a baby, I would have a lollipop, it'd be perfect. I wouldn't even eat it because it was so perfect, just the way it was. There was no cracks in it. It was just like perfectly smooth. The minute it got one crack in it, or one little like, I don't know, anything happened to it, I would just ruin the whole thing. I would just like smash it on the ground and be like, oh, I don't want this anymore. I wouldn't even eat it because I just loved the perfectness of it, how there was no little scratches, no little flaws in it. And so then I would also apply this to other things. Like I had a weird obsession for rings when I was a little younger. Just like anything shiny, kind of blingy with that was like had no flaws. Like watches was another one. And I think another one was I had a weird obsession with like lava lamps for a little while. Like I loved just the look of them. I was like, wow, this is so cool, you know, so cool looking. So I
Well,
just
and
love to analyze the
I think a
details
lot
of
of
certain things.
SJs have, I think a lot of introverted sensing sensors have collections. Like you had all kinds of collections because you just like to admire your things and the details about your things. But we put you in Child Find when you were 3 or 4 to help you work on some of your sensory processing. We took you to occupational therapy. There were tags on clothes bothered you, textures and food bothered you. Can you talk a little bit about what you remember about all the like the IEP you were in? Like at school, you had to go in a squisher and you had to carry heavy books. And can you talk a little bit about what it was like being in the classroom with your sensory processing?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of the times in the classroom, I would, you know, kind of I would get overloaded a lot of the time because, you know, as a kid, you're expected to perform all of these things at a certain time, all of the sudden, you know, and that's what school kind of introduces to you. Like there are deadlines, there are things you have to do, you have some responsibility. And, you know, as a, you know, as an ISFJ taking us all in, it can be really overwhelming at first, especially in elementary school. That's where most of these problems kind of like came to a head is just all of these overwhelming circumstances. So like I would kind of go into this, like my teachers and friends and parents called this spacing out is where I would just space out because I would just kind of shut down. That was my way of shutting down is I would just kind of go into my head, my little zone, and just kind of not really, it's almost like daydreaming in a way. And that's when I get overwhelmed.
Well,
And
talk about roller coasters and
yeah,
doors.
like, and so to like combat this, to like get my little time alone. We had a trampoline in the backyard that I love to go on. And I would just like, I would just go into my little world of imagining different things. And like sometimes I would run around the backyard because I was pretending I was a roller coaster and I wasn't in the reality around me. I was on like one of the craziest rides, craziest roller coasters rides you've ever been on. And so that was just my way of going into my own little world so that I could just kind of retract from the situation around me. And so my teachers had me go into this thing called the squisher, where it was just like two like kind of cushions and you would just kind of roll yourself through them. But it was a good way to like just kind of reset my brain. And then I would come back to class kind of reset, ready to get more like stimulus without getting overwhelmed again, without spacing out. So I would open doors and pretend I just had a weird fascination with elevators too. I thought they were so cool. And you know, I picked apart every little detail of the elevator, like, oh, it's amazing. So I would open and close doors and pretend it was an elevator. And that was just kind of going into my own little world, my own little space where no one could bother me. And I could just kind of you know, just be and focus on one thing, focus on myself and not the stimulus around me.
And that is very type nine right there, behavior. Type nines withdraw from the world and they go into this other place. And that's what you were doing. Even at the time, you were like 3 or 4 when you were doing this. So it's amazing how fast that shows up. So because you're so cautious and calm, combined with being a feeler, it made certain extracurricular activities a better fit than others. So, can you talk about some of the extracurricular activities we tried to put you in before we knew your temperament that you hated?
I hated some things like basketball was a big no. Soccer, big no. I would run the other way on the field towards the wrong goal a lot of the times.
This is when you were
Football.
very young. I'm going to defend you.
Yes, very young.
When you ran the other way, it was when probably you were trying to be a roller coaster or you were escaping or
Yeah,
something.
it was just like a classic kid moment, just going the wrong way. And you're like, oh. At least he's trying, you know, whatever. There's also, let's see. Oh, I hated flag football. Even that was just like too intense for me. I was just like, I can't do this. But there were some extracurriculars I liked over others, and one of them was swimming, because it was like there was one goal and you had to only focus on one thing. You didn't have to focus on the other people around you as much. You know, it was not as much competition. It wasn't as much people like running different directions, you know, trying to get to you. It wasn't as overwhelming. It was more like you're focused on one thing and that's just going as fast as you can. And then also cross country was good because, you know, you're running yourself. You're not really like worrying about other people. You're just kind of like, I'm gonna run my race. And then also in high school I joined marching band because I was like, I'm just gonna focus on my own. All you have to do is focus on your own choreography. And I was in drumline, so you just had to focus on your own like techniques and playing. But it wasn't like this thing where you had to focus on every player on the field, have all this competition, all of this overwhelming stimulus. It was more like, I'm gonna focus on this one task that I have to carry out really well. And that's what really helped me with a lot of extracurricular activities.
And so I want, parents of an ISFJ to know not to just because you have like these expectations that your son or daughter is going to be awesome in sports. It's just so important to know if you have an ISFJ that they might not be super competitive and might want something that's more singular focused, just like Nathan said. And also, I don't think you liked the like the head-to-head, in basketball and football, like the competitiveness of that. Like you can be super competitive. Like he rode the Copper Triangle with us, which is like an 80-mile bike ride that climbs how many elevation
It's
feet?
like 6,000 feet, I
Yeah,
think.
6,000 feet elevation. Like you push yourself. You're a very much endurance. That's why cross country was good, but I don't want to throw you under the bus, but he broke his arm twice in cross country. Yeah, and I think that was just because what you were just paying attention to the world around you and not the crack in the sidewalk where you tripped, maybe.
I think that was just like me focusing on like myself, what I had to do, how like I just needed to run. I wasn't focusing on what was really happening like around me, like the people around me. And so a lot of the times, I think the first time I broke my arm, like there was a girl that just suddenly tripped in front of me because we would all run kind of close together, and so I like tripped on her, fell over, and broke my arms.
You had a really good line to tell people because you said you tripped over a girl. So that was great.
Exactly. I
Yeah.
fell over a girl.
You fell over a girl. Yeah. So what were like, how were you socially? How did you feel about social situations in elementary school, junior high, high school? Because, that's something else I want extroverted parents to know that are all worried that their little ISFJ is maybe not being as social. So kind of explain how you feel about social.
I think it's okay that an ISFJ is not the most social butterfly in the group. But like in elementary school and in middle school, I found that I would thrive best with a few close friends rather than a bunch of being a part of a really big group, or being having a ton of friends. And I think it's just because with more friends comes more stimulus and more things to keep up with. That at that point I was like, you know, it goes back to like being detail oriented. I wanted to more focus on a few meaningful friendships than a bunch of, you know, here and there friendships, which a lot of people do. I think more extroverts are focused with reaching as many people as you know, as they can and meeting new people. That's their thing, is they love meeting new people. They love getting those new experiences. But for me, it's like I want to focus on the meaningful friendships I have.
One thing about introverted sensing is that both types that have it are SJ types, which are rooted in the past. And so your friendships that you've had for a long time are most special to you and you're extremely loyal. And That can leave your ISFJ very vulnerable because not everyone is wired that way to really value their friends they've had for a long time. And you experienced some of that in high school. You had some pain in that.
Yeah, I mean, that was the first, like my high school, the end of high school, right as COVID hit, was my first really like experience with being loyal to someone and it just not being reciprocated at all. And just having the fear of losing all of the few friends I had that were really close to me. I experienced that fear of being all of them being out of my life all of a sudden, all at once. It was just a lot to take in. And it made me had to like confront conflict and confront the fact that I was labeled as the bad guy in the group, which was really, really tough for me because that was my biggest fear was feeling like I didn't belong in a friend group, feeling like I was rejected by some of the closest people I knew. But at the same time, it was really good for me and helped me branch out to other friends, experience like a whole different reset of like almost a new life with social groups and friend groups. And it was super uncomfortable at first. I really, really uncomfortable. I don't embrace change that well. And this was a whole new change. And I was like, I don't really want to meet new people. I like investing in what I have. I don't really like that change. But this change into a new friend group, and then also in college, having another big change into a whole new friend group. Allowed me to realize like it's not that bad meeting new people. It's not that bad investing into other people. It may take some time. It may be uncomfortable, but now in college, like I have some of the closest friends I've ever had in my entire life, and that's because I branched out. It's because I put myself out there. And so now, like going forward, I need to realize that, while it's great to have a few close friends, it also really doesn't hurt to invest in new friendships as well, as they can be really rewarding.
And introverted sensors can have a lot of anxiety. And one of the ways to combat anxiety, if you have a little one with anxiety already starting to show up, is exposure therapy. You expose them in a safe environment, you expose them to little tastes of that thing that they're afraid of. And can you talk about your anxiety, Nathan, that you had about going to bed at night? Can you talk about your little kid bedtime routine?
I mean, I was obviously a very big worrier too. So I would have a lot of insecurities, and felt like a little on the defensive at all times. Like I felt like I needed to kind of protect myself and others at all times. So I had some insecurity there that I just needed to like, put barriers up, put up the defenses. So every night I would be worried that vulnerability would be like exposed, whether it be like a robber getting into the house. That would be like a really big concern of mine, even though it's like super irrational and I know that now. I would just really have trouble falling asleep at night because I would just be worried about all of the things that could happen, all of the outcomes in my head that could happen. So this could just be a very like unhealthy spiraling of thoughts and emotions. My parents would have me lock all the doors, check all the windows. And once I had that security, I was like, okay, I'm able to go to bed. I have that reassurance. And I feel like I am defended. So that was just a very big thing I needed, is I needed certainty. And I needed safety. I needed to feel like I had my safe that I was in was safe, or that the space that I was in was safe, was what I really needed to feel as a child.
Your mind would spin, and so you were worried about not sleeping too. And so we had sleep tapes for you that we did. We had to do some therapy, some sleep therapy with you, where we'd have to slowly remove ourselves from your room because for a while you were sleeping in our room. And so just a lot of anxiety with all that watchfulness, and also with the fear of change and just needing security. There's just a lot of anxiety there. So it's just so important to expose your ISFJ to new experiences. And we definitely did that with you. We were doing new things all the time, because some people with introverted sensing don't want to do anything new at all because they're so cautious and so afraid. Extroverted intuition is actually their inferior baby function, and that is pretty much exploring the unknown. And so anytime you can do something unknown with your ISFJ and reward them for it and make it safe and fun, that will really help. That will count as an exposure. Do you think, Nathan, all the adventures we had helped you kind of get out of those anxieties sooner, because you saw that we went into all these unknown situations and it came out okay?
No, I think that's like one big thing I would advise to, any parent with an ISFJ is that they may be uncomfortable and hesitant to it at first, but you need to give them the exposure to the unknown to know that it's not scary and that it's not as big and as bad as it may seem. Because, I think for me, my mind tends to spiral to like worst case scenarios, what could happen. And I'm just processing all these things in my head. But to then to actually see it and to have that memory of it being fun or it being, a really great experience, I block that away, and then for future experiences, I'm like, I remember this being really fun. That means new experiences will probably be fun too, and I should check it out. And that these new experiences, like, they have those that rewarding effect to them. So, those memories, I have positive memories of exploration of, getting and, going outside and trying new things. I have positive experiences of those. And so now as an adult, I like totally cherish and like always try to explore new things, new places, and go outside my comfort zone a lot, because I've done it before and it's been positive for me. And I continue to do that today. And I think if an ISFJ didn't get those chances to be exposed to new things and were kind of more sheltered, I think that would look very different, at least for me as an adult, of trying new things and exploring new places. I think I would be more inclined to stay with where I'm comfortable, with where I know the environment.
It's a temptation for a parent to want to shelter their ISFJ because they are so sweet and they remember everything you do as a parent, which that's like so priceless. There aren't very many kids that will remember that time you made chocolate chip cookies when they were 4, and they remember every detail about it. And so you want to do everything in your power to keep this precious child from getting hurt. But that, and it killed me when you went through that. It absolutely killed me when you went through that with your friends. But now you say it was actually a good thing for you. So I'm telling parents out there, it's a good thing when your child faces hard things because it helps them grow. It really does. And one of the things about the lens you look through as an introverted sensor is you're so observant and you notice every little detail that you watch people. And so you assume they're watching you with the same kind of detailed scrutiny. And so it can make you very self-conscious. So can you talk about how you learned about that? And I know I drilled that into your head when you were little, but do you know when it actually clicked, when you kind of quit being self-conscious and realized that people weren't paying as close of attention to you as you were to them?
No, like I just have always been very like particular about certain things, especially when it comes to like I like to seem like cleaned up and kind of know what I'm doing, and like the small details I become very, very insecure about. And I think other people can see that, but I've definitely noticed that a lot of people do not see that. And I've also been learning that, especially when I got into college. This roommate that I have now, I don't mean to throw him under the bus, but he always has bedhead. He rolls out of bed every morning, goes to class, and he doesn't care, and he doesn't notice those type of things. Those are not his values, and he's not insecure about his appearance at all. And so I like definitely noticed that with him. He's like more carefree, and he's kind of instilled some of that in me too, where I'm like, I don't always need to like look my best. I don't always need to, like, people are more inclined to really get close to you when you're being your authentic self, when you're not putting your walls up, when you're not guarding your insecurities. And I've just kind of noticed that being real with people is where you get your closest friendships and relationships is just being real and being open and out there, even if it means it, like, exposing some of your flaws. Like, that's what makes you you, you know, and you can't run away from that. And if people don't accept you for even with your flaws, you know, then they're not true friends, and you don't, you know, have true friendships. So exposing your true self will give you those friends that will be loyal with you, that will stick by your side. And I've learned that now. And I, you know, learned that in high school too, when my whole friend group left me. I know that, you know, guarding some of that insecurities and not confronting the situation kind of made that situation escalate even worse. You know, like, I didn't confront that situation. I didn't expose like my own flaws. And then also I didn't call them out. I didn't confront them about their own flaws, because I felt like I needed to guard my own thoughts. I felt like I needed to guard my own feelings towards the situation. So that's when it can be harmful. And now I've learned, especially like after that situation, to voice your concerns and to not be insecure about, you don't always have to seem like this happy-go-lucky guy that's good with everything. You know, you can speak up for yourself.
Well, and that's the peacemaker. So the type nine fears being having any kind of conflict.
Yeah.
And their false identity is, I am peaceful. I do not cause conflict. And their fixation is on the external world. So part of this focusing on all these details is to avoid going internal and paying attention to what you're feeling inside, because a lot of ISFJs feel really overlooked. That's one of their biggest hurting points, is feeling like they don't matter or they're overlooked because they are the peacemaker. For those of you who are really into the Enneagram, they're the top of the circle of the Enneagram, which means they're a little bit of everything, which means one of their superpowers is really being able to step in every person's skin. And if you've ever had been friends with an ISFJ, it's a wonderful thing, because they can literally be the biggest diplomat and understand everyone's point of view. And that's why they're called the peacemaker, because they can literally, you know, like, advocate for every single person's point of view, because they're so observant of everyone's behavior and everyone's personality. And they're so self-forgetting that they don't have their own self-interest when they're bringing peace. And so it's on the internet, some people say, Jesus, what's type nine? Yeah, I've seen that on the internet, that they say Jesus was a type nine. So the one thing about your ISFJ is you want to make sure you see them, that you give them room to say no, that you let them say no. They won't. Like, Nathan, I'll ask you to do something, and you'll kind of go, okay. And I can kind of tell you don't want to. You don't want to. And so I'll give you permission to say no, because ISFJs hate to say no.
Yeah.
And so just they tend to go along to get along. And so really encourage your ISFJ, if they are a little peacemaker, or your introverted sensor. A lot of thinking introverted sensors are not peacemakers. They're usually type fives, observers, type sixes, loyalists, or type ones, perfectionists. So the feeling introverted sensors are usually the peacemakers. So just make sure that you're allowing them to voice their opinions, but you have to draw it out of them. I mean, what would you say, Nathan? What advice would you give to a parent to get their ISFJ to actually share an opinion, or to share their negative opinion?
I mean, you really have to encourage them. Like, you give them, I think you give them the something that you know they're hesitant to, where they just they'll say yes, and I still struggle with this today, just saying like yes to things even if I don't want to do them, just to please those around me.
So hesitation means no.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why you have to pull the no out of them. I think that's a really good thing to do, is you have to be like, no, no. Like, what do you actually think? It's okay if you don't want to do this. You know, I won't be mad at you. That's like, I'd be more happy with you if you expressed what you actually wanted in this situation. I think that would be really good for them, because in that way, they're like, oh, they really care about my thoughts. And that would actually be benefiting, to like share my actual thoughts. So I think if you kind of urge them on and say like, no, what do you actually think? Like, I want to know, I want to genuinely know.
And I think one-on-one time is huge. One-on-one time.
Yeah.
Because and that I think, way you're going to be more honest with how you're actually feeling.
Yeah. No, just like giving them the option to say no, giving them that space to say no, and also encouraging them to say no is, I think, very, very important. And I think I still struggle with that today. It's been a constant struggle with me, of just like, but I've learned over time that it's more beneficial to sometimes say no upfront to things rather than say yes and then kind of like throw it under the rug and then like said yes to certain plans that I don't want to do. And then I eventually just like don't show up to these plans because I'm like, I don't want to say no directly, but I also don't want to go. And then that hurts the individual more because they're like, I was counting on you to go and you said yes, but now you're not here or you didn't show up. So it's important to like sometimes just be like no up front. And that's another important thing, is saying no can actually be really beneficial to relationships and friendships, and just knowing that your limitations and knowing that it's okay to prioritize yourself is very, very important for an ISFJ.
ISFJ can really shock their parents too, because you can seem like the most perfect, honest, trustworthy, rule follower child on earth, which is what we felt about you. Like, you had perfect grades. You graduated top in your class in high school. And unbeknownst to us, you were experimenting with some pretty serious stuff. And we had no clue. So can you talk about that?
Something that's also been really a growth for me is being like open with your mistakes, because I think a lot of ISFJs like to appear as an individual that has everything all together. They make the right choices. And, you know, they don't like exposing their flaws or the mistakes or, you know, past dumb decisions they've made that kind of makes them more vulnerable. And that for me in high school was, I went along with the group a lot. I liked to please the group, and the group that I kind of fit in with started to kind of, experiment a lot with substances, and, you know, and I too would experiment with substances because I felt like I needed, that was my way of showing my loyalty to them. I kept it a secret from you guys, but I think, they, especially my mom, here, she handled it in a really, really great way that allowed me to open up without feeling that shame. And I would honestly recommend this for other parents too, is she's like, okay, be honest. Like, you know, and very, very gently was like, you know, did you do anything in high school? Did you do any substances? I'm just like, I'm genuinely curious. I won't get mad. I just want to know like what you've done. You know, if you've experimented in anything. And that gave me the chance to be like, okay, I can be authentic about this and she won't get mad. She's just curious. And I told her that, and she accepted me still. And she was like, you know, that's okay. Like, a lot of people go through the same experience and know that they've screwed up. And so I think if it's good to just give them that place of, I will still accept you and I won't be angry with you if you open up about these things. And then it kind of discouraged me from doing it in the future and being stupid with it in the future, is because I was like, you know, I want to genuinely respect my parents because they were so respecting of me opening up about this, that I want to please them too. And I don't want to continue in this kind of lifestyle anymore, you know? So I think just giving your space, giving space for your ISFJ and giving them that chance to open up about it, being encouraging of that, I think was really helpful to me to just come clean about those kind of things and know that I screwed up in the end. So.
Well, and extroverted sensors are more about like party hardy and have the wild experience just for the fun hit of it. And if the party's fun without any alcohol or drugs, it's even going to be more fun with alcohol and drugs, And whereas I think an introverted sensor is more like, I'm going to do this to fit in. Yep. I'm going to do this to take away my social anxiety. Uh-huh. I'm going to do this maybe out of a little bit of sensory curiosity because you became a doctor or you haven't become a doctor yet, but you're pre-med because you are very in tune with your own body, with your own five senses. And so there's a curiosity you have with substances, would you say?
Yeah, no, there definitely is. And it's just like, because I love the sensory experience around me, I pay attention to that so much. I become curious to what things may alter that and how I may see things differently. Like alcohol is a big one where it's like, for most people, it's a way to kind of, be more extroverted. And that is me too. I'm usually more likable when I kind of have my guard down and I'm more confident, because ISFJs are sometimes very reserved and they kind of hold back with doing risky things, in their normal state. But with like a little bit of alcohol, I'm like, okay, I get to open up a little bit more. I get to put these walls down, which is relieving in a way, because everyone else is putting their walls down too. But that's not a good way to think, it's like, you need to do this in your everyday life. You don't need something to help you open up because that's when, dependency can come in. And it's just a very unhealthy way of thinking. So I think it's important to, as an ISFJ, to work on these things without, depending on something to open you up, let your walls down, but to practice it on just a regular basis when, you don't have any alcohol or anything in you. So I think that's very important. And that's something I learned, especially like during my high school days.
So I think it's so important to know, to kind of know the friend group that your ISFJ is hanging with, because the go along to get along is real. And also just, having just wonderful communication, with your ISFJ and going on one-on-one walks or one-on-one whatever to talk to them about what's going on and give them a chance to open up with you with what's going on and letting them know that you have unconditional acceptance and love for them no matter what.
So. And I think if you don't give them that opportunity, if you don't give them an opportunity to open up, ISFJs can get into patterns of like deception, being deceptive and lying in order to, continue to be peaceful. Like I remember an example is I would tell my parents that I was just going over to watch a movie when I was, doing not those things, I would just make it seem like a very innocent, hangout or a very innocent, night, just watching movies or, playing games or something like that. And that was not a good pattern I was developing of lying.
You're not a peacemaker. You are, but you're trying not to be. That's only part of your identity. You're trying to assert yourself more. You're trying not to just only be a peacemaker, but it just gives you some self-awareness to know where God wants to grow you and where God wants to work on you. And I just love seeing how self-aware you are and how much growth you've had. And I'm very, very proud of you. And I really, really appreciate you doing this interview with me. Is there anything else, any final thought you'd want to say to advocate for the introverted sensors of the world out there?
Yeah. I think, I think for me, it's like it's okay to I think you should accept that you may be different from other people. I definitely like don't tend to compare a lot. I think that's a lot of people. It's just a lot of comparison. but for me, you know, it's like I focus and I can dwell on my weaknesses without doing anything to fix these weaknesses. But you need to give yourself space and know that you are different. You have your many qualities about you. And that while you may feel different, like you have so much potential to grow, and that you should expose these weaknesses so that you can, you know, grow in the future. But you know, just know that you will feel like you'll feel different. You'll feel like an outsider. You'll feel very insecure at times. And I think it's as parents, it's good to expose these insecurities. And to allow your ISFJ to just kind of like open up about what they're feeling and open up if they feel as though they're being, you know, underappreciated or they feel as though they don't matter. It's really important to talk through these things so that an ISFJ feels like they can be more vulnerable with people around them, because that is what helps, you know, allow them to be seen, allow them to be heard.
What I help families do is I help parents model this growth mindset, model that we all have weaknesses, we all have things we're working on, and to talk about it to your kids. Self-awareness as a leader, you know, Harvard Business Journal says that's like the number one quality of a leader, and a parent is a leader. And so talking about your own limitations and your own struggles so that your child knows that, oh, wow, I admire my mom and dad and they struggle. So I guess it's okay that I struggle. But I think so many times parents think they have to come across with this very strong, I'm in charge, you know. But I think it's so important to expose your weaknesses and your growth areas to your kids so that they'll mutually share back what they're struggling with and what they're trying to grow. Thanks so much for listening. It would be way too normal and expected for me to ask you for a review. So if you learned something new or just wanted to show the love, instead I'll just say, eat some soup. And that'll be my special way of asking, but not asking. So eat some soup. It'll make you feel all good and warm inside. And as a thank you, I'd love to offer you two free resources. The first is a beautifully illustrated ebook entitled 14 Instant Ways to Form a Deeper Connection with Your Child. And the second is a free child temperament test and video for gaining new insight into one of your children. You'll find these free resources at wendygossett.com. And you can also check out many helpful articles, as well as buy a copy of Your Child's Inner Drive, Parenting by Personality from Toddlers to Teens. Or maybe you're ready. You're tired of riding the cranky train because there isn't enough peace in your home. So make the move and sign up for my Understanding Your Family 101 Brain Mapping Personality session. There are scads of helpful videos on my YouTube channel at Wendy Gossett, including the silly one of me dancing in a blizzard on the highway, embarrassing my child. So until next time, friends, keep dancing through the quirks and chaos of parenting, because who needs normal when you can thrive in the extraordinary?